day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. When you think about history here in Detroit and Southeast Michigan, and think about Black history in particular, there are a lot of names that jump almost immediately to your mind. Coleman Young, John Conyers, Charles Diggs, Dennis Archer. But what about George Crockett? He was a judge and a congressman here, and a lifelong fighter for equality and civil rights. As someone who grew up here in the 1970s and 1980s, Crockett was, for me, somebody who was pretty familiar. I knew who he was, knew what he did, thought he was making an incredible mark on our community. But fast forward 40 years, and I don't know that most people know that name or know what he did. Again, this is someone who fought for economic and social justice throughout his life. He grew up in the Jim Crow South and moved to Detroit, where he fought particularly hard to protect unarmed African Americans from police brutality and to defend labor unions. A new book, co-authored by Peter Hammer, talks about the life of George Crockett Jr. Peter is the director of Wayne State University's Law School's Damon J. Keith Center for Civil Rights, and he co-wrote No Equal Justice, The Legacy of Civil Rights Icon George Crockett Jr. We invited Peter onto the show to talk about what made George's life so fascinating and how he was able to continue advocating for a more equal America. Peter Hammer, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So let's start with this. Like I said, there are so many names in our history that pop into people's minds when they think about prominent African Americans and prominent civil rights heroes here in Southeast Michigan. I think of George Crockett as, you know, as absolutely holding his own in that crowd. Why don't more people talk about him? Why is there not more about him in our community? And what attracted you to the idea of writing a book about him?
Yeah, so I first want to give a shout out to Ed Littlejohn, one of our emeritus professors, because it really was Ed's original idea. And the book started with Ed's work in the early 1990s. So we had the benefit of interviews with Crockett and interviews with Ernie Goodman. And then other work eclipsed it. So about 5-6 years ago, Ed said, why don't we work together to finish this project? And it's been an amazing exercise. I've just fallen in love with Crockett. And you say, sort of, what makes him different? I really think it's his principled courage. A lot of people know what the right thing is. Very few people are willing to sacrifice for it. And he made tremendous sacrifices for standing up for what he thought was right.
So let's talk about what made him such a force, why he was so committed to racial justice and a more equal union. What were the things that made George Crockett stand out?
Yeah, I think that an underappreciated fact is he grew up in the Jim Crow South at a time when Reconstruction was still in living memory. And so Jacksonville had all sorts of heroes and leaders, including people like James Weldon Johnson and A. Philip Randolph. So you can think about the sort of him growing up of a very nurturing environment, although it's a segregated environment, hearing about those things and hearing about Black leaders, right? It wasn't mythical. It wasn't unknown. But there's also things that are just sui generis about people. He just had a spine of steel. He was meticulous in the way he approached his work. He was led always by what he thought was right. And you already mentioned the kind of two twin engines, racial justice and economic justice, is what really motivated him throughout his whole life.
Yeah, yeah. So George grew up in the Jim Crow South and then moved north to Michigan. Talk about his background and how that influenced his view of the world and the work that he ended up doing here in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah, so his first encounter with Michigan was at University of Michigan Law School. He was very clear that the racism he faced in the South was not very much different than the racism he faced in the North. It was just a little bit more polite and therefore sometimes more dangerous. But he graduated in 1934 as the only black student at the University of Michigan Law School. Had a wonderful career that took him from West Virginia, where he switched from being a Republican to being a Democrat and campaigned for a senator, and got the political payoff of going to the Department of Labor, and really being one of the leading black lawyers in the New Deal administration. But then he hit a glass ceiling. The next promotion at Labor would have meant he would be supervising white lawyers, and that was just not going to happen. So he goes over and becomes one of the first equivalent of an administrative law judge at the Fair Employment Practices Commission, where he runs into the UAW leadership. And they extend him an offer to come to Detroit and work at the UAW and take a leading role in fighting discrimination inside the UAW in the early 1940s.
And the discrimination that he faces then and witnesses other people facing is what I think ends up lighting that fire in him to really do things differently and to fight against it, which he does, as you point out, from the 40s all the way up through the 1990s.
Yeah, I mean, every decade, and this is what makes him such an amazing story. So he's fighting for labor rights and against labor discrimination inside the union in the 40s. He's one of the leading actors nationally and in Michigan fighting McCarthyism through the 1950s. He and Ernie Goodman and the National Lawyers Guild are playing leading roles in the civil rights movement in the 1960s, and he's actually down in Mississippi summer, Jackson, Mississippi in 1964, running the National Lawyers Guild efforts before he comes back and is elected to Recorder's Court and makes history in Detroit.
And one of the things that I think is really interesting about George Crockett is that in that early period in the 40s, he founds a law firm, and it's a different kind of law firm. It's a law firm that looks different from others. Talk about why.
Yeah. So first, that he was a victim of Walter Reuther's purge inside the UAW, right? So his good work there is come artificially short. And again, that was a matter of principle, and it was a dispute he had with Reuther about requiring a non-discrimination provision in the GM contract, and Reuther didn't do that. Right. But so he gets kicked out, but he's not the only one kicked out. So Marie Sugar, Ernie Goodman get kicked out. And Ernie Goodman and George Crockett found in 1951 the first integrated law firm in the country. Right. Goodman, Crockett, Eden and Robb. And they become the sort of base in which they're doing civil rights work that's cross-subsidized by work on pioneering work on workman's comp and pioneering work on products liability to subsidize the work that they're going to be doing on civil rights. And so you can't talk about Crockett without talking about Goodman, and you can't talk about Goodman without talking about Crockett.
Yeah, yeah. He also has a role in pushing back against the anti-communist fervor of the 1950s, and that brings him into contact with another really important Detroiter, Coleman Young. Talk about what he does there.
Yeah, so Crockett was part of the national team defending the leadership of the U.S. Communist Party in the United States versus Dennis, who were really being convicted by what they thought and what they said and not what they did. And when he comes back after that trial, he's facing contempt court. He's sentenced to criminal contempt to go to jail for that work, but it doesn't stop him from doing the work. So he's fighting disbarment. He's still fighting for people's rights. He's representing people in front of the House Americans House American Activities Committee, and one of the people he's representing is a labor leader named Coleman Young. Coleman Young is a force of nature without Crockett, but you can sort of imagine, and there's pictures in the book of both of them at the witness table, you know, Crockett the lawyer and Coleman Young who's being interrogated. And I think most of your listeners, many of your listeners, knows the story of Coleman Young really just flipping the hearing and really putting the Congress on trial. Thankfully, that was recorded for posterity and actually pressed into a record that became incredibly popular on the streets of Detroit. But I always love that image of Young and Crockett sitting at that table.
Yeah, Yeah. I'm talking with Peter Hammer. He is a director of the Damon J. Keith Center for Civil Rights at the Wayne State University Law School. And most recently, he's the co-author of a book called No Equal Justice, The Legacy of Civil Rights Icon George Crockett Jr. We are talking about Crockett, who was a judge and a congressman here in Southeast Michigan, but also just a lifelong fighter for equality and for justice. I want to hear from you during the conversation as well. Call and tell us if you have memories of George Crockett and the work that he did to distinguish himself and to better our community here in Detroit and Southeast Michigan. What are those memories? What are the things that you think of when you hear that name? Also, give us a call and talk about the heroes that you have in other ways here in Southeast Michigan. As I said in the open, George Crockett's name, I think, stands among so many other folks who did remarkable things and made life better for those of us who are here today by making great sacrifices and standing up against injustice. Who are the people that you think of when you think about all that work and all of the things that we benefit from because of it? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Peter, George became really active in the National Lawyers Guild in Detroit. Talk about what that was and what was so influential about his work there.
Yeah, so the National Lawyers Guild was one of the few integrated national bar associations, and Crockett and Goodman played leading roles in that. And they, again, took principled stances that they didn't purge their leadership during the Red Scare, as even the ACLU and other organizations were doing. But what they were committed to doing was getting lawyers from the North to do the frontline civil rights work representing people in the South, because no white lawyers in the South were going to do it, and there weren't enough black lawyers to do all the work. So they actually reorganized the National Lawyers Guild and focused it for a number of years to be exclusively focused on defending civil rights workers in the South. I love this image, and not many people know it, that so much of the important legal work for the movement was actually happening in Detroit. And that connection is highlighted in the book.
Yeah. He's also, as a judge, somewhat famous for a decision he made about the officer-involved shooting at the New Bethel Baptist Church. And, boy, we're going back into deep Detroit history by even mentioning that shooting. But talk about that decision and how it fits into this legacy that he forges for himself, but also how that incident marks Detroit and the civil rights struggle here. It's one of the incidents that I think really defines that time in Detroit.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you really hope that young people are listening because they got to know this history.
Mm-hmm.
But to set the stage for your listeners, think about 1969, 2 years after the rebellion took place because of a mass arrest. Right. And the Republic of New Africa, which is a black separatist group, was holding their second annual anniversary of meetings at C.L. Franklin's church, Aretha Franklin's father, the New Bethel Baptist Church. And there were so many informants there. They were probably tripping over each other. So this is under heavy surveillance. But somehow the two people that didn't know it was being surveilled were the two police officers in a scout car who are driving by and seeing a bunch of armed and uniformed honor guard for the National Republic of New Africa escorting Milton Henry out to his car as the meeting is breaking up. And there's an altercation between the Republic of New Africa and the police. Sadly, one police officer is killed, another is shot. And literally within minutes, right, scores of police officers show up because the meeting, again, was under surveillance, and they invade the church with guns blazing. And it's really amazing that nobody got killed. And then again, 2 years after the rebellion, arrest 140-some men, women, and children from the basement of the church and take them down to the first precinct. Right. So C.L. Franklin and Jimmy Del Rio, a state senator, are knocking on Crockett's door, a little after 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning. And within about an hour, right, Crockett is down at the police station with a habeas corpus petition in hand and demanding that the police set up space in the police station, police precinct, to hold court hearings. And Crockett is forcing the prosecutor and the police to present evidence that these people had committed a crime, and they couldn't, right? So he starts to release them, and the prosecutor goes crazy. Crockett holds him in contempt of court. They reconvene at Recorder's Court in the afternoon, and the process continues. And by the end of the day, Crockett has released everyone but two folks where the police have some pretty scant evidence that they had committed a crime. And the next day, you would think that the headline would be Black Separatist Group Kills Police Officer, but the headline became, Black Judge Enforces Constitutional Rights and Protects Black Citizens, and all hell breaks loose, right? And there's all sorts of important backlash and politics that grow out of that New Bethel incident.
Yeah, and it's worth kind of pausing there to talk about how unusual it was in the city at that time to even have an African-American judge. I mean, this is the late 1960s, and Black political power is starting to coalesce, really, and then in the next decade or so, we'll really see it blossom. But the fact that he was there and the fact that he could, again, push for that kind of justice was it was not something you could just take for granted in the city at that time.
No, and people need to know the history of Recorder's Court. It was a criminal court that was for Detroit only, which meant the judicial elections were from the city and not from the county, which opened the door for Black judges, even if it was only a crack, and that jurors came from Detroit rather than the county. So a really important institution that enabled somebody like Crockett to get on the bench. But when he got on the bench, he used that power. He really understood the power, the differential power, and ironically, that a lot of people don't suspect, of the trial court judge and the discretion that the trial court has to do justice. And he used that power, right? So importantly, if we go back to New Bethel, there was a huge white backlash within days. The governor's calling for his impeachment. The mayor's calling for his impeachment. There are Senate resolutions being passed calling for his impeachment. And that triggers the Black United Front, right? A really interesting coalition of all Black factions in Detroit who are often not united. And they rally behind Crockett, right? And they're there to defend Crockett. And it's not an overstatement to say that that Black United Front and the power of that unity and solidarity that was created over New Bethel played an instrumental role in facilitating Coleman Young, who again is an independent force of nature, to become the first Black mayor. I think you can draw a line right between those two, the reaction to New Bethel, the Black solidarity, and the rise of Coleman Young in terms of being elected mayor.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the program that way. Let's go to Chris in Detroit. Chris, what's on your mind?
So talking about Judge Crockett, I remember as a kid meeting him. So my mom always made it a deal for us to meet some of our local people, and she knew where he lived, and she had a relationship with him, and he met us, and he was just so nice. He was like he's one of the nicest politicians I've ever met.
Yeah.
And it's something that's always stuck with me. That's why I was pretty mad when they got rid of his school.
Yeah, no, that's right. There used to be a George Crockett Academy. I'm not sure what actually happened with that, but you're right. There isn't a whole lot around town that is named for George Crockett. It's probably one of the reasons that I don't think as many people know about him as know about some of the others. But Chris, that's a great story, and the idea of your mom deciding, hey, I'm going to take my son over to meet this person because it's somebody I think will inspire him is a really sweet story. Thanks very much. Let's go to Mary Ann in Detroit. Mary Ann, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Hey.
I was just calling about one of the people that I really was impressed with Detroit City Council was Mary Ann Mahaffey.
Uh-huh.
And all she did to promote and her commitment for women's issues, racial justice, and always fighting for the underrepresented and the underserved. And I was really, I'm a Mary Ann too, but he developed the first rape kit crisis center. So yep. I thought that was very important in her term. And I just thought she was a great leader for our city.
Yeah, yeah. No, Mary Ann Mahaffey was, of course, an incredible force on city council for many, many years here in Detroit, and is somebody who also, I think, inspired lots of folks in terms of just thinking about what justice and equality look like in Detroit. Peter, I do want to talk about why more isn't said or memorialized, I guess, about George Crockett. What is the impediment to that, I guess, here in Detroit? We don't have a lot of things that commemorate him.
Yeah, no, and it really is a shame. But it's part of a larger picture where a lot of Black history is not recorded. And, you know, there's already a biography about Sugar, and there's already a biography about Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that was really important to us is to make sure this story is at least preserved. The thing I really want to stress is that Crockett speaks to issues of our time. And the book includes lengthy quotes, mm-hmm. so the reader really gets a sense of his voice and his personality. But I really think young people need this story. And we're working with the school districts in Wayne, in Oakland, in Detroit to try to get this story into the curriculum so people can start hearing this story. And there are sometimes that you need a voice from another time talking about racism, mm-hmm. talking about injustice, talking about police brutality, the same issues that young people care about today. And this is a hero that Detroiters need. And I think it's a hero particularly that young Detroiters need to really say that they, coming out of Detroit, can stand up and make a difference around the very issues that they care most about.
Yeah, yeah. I should also say before we have to end that George Crockett Academy, according to Google, is still alive and going. It is still a K-8 elementary school, public charter school here in the city of Detroit. So we do have that as a way of remembering George. Okay,
George would be upset if we didn't say that there's another famous Crockett that doesn't get the history that she deserves.
Yes.
And that his wife,
yes.
Etheline Crockett, was a force of nature and a pioneer physician on her own. And so it's a wonderful example, just like Judge Keith and his wife, where mm-hmm. you have these of couples that really support each other and probably could not have done nearly what they did without that kind of partnership.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Peter, that's maybe your next book, the Etheline Crockett story, right? Peter Hammer, always great to have you here on Detroit Today, and congratulations on the book. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about one of my favorite events every year here in the city of Detroit. I'm talking about Jazz Fest, which is back live in downtown Detroit this weekend for the first time since the pandemic. Lots of buzz and excitement about the return of Jazz Fest. We're going to talk with Chris Collins, who's the artistic director of the Detroit Jazz Fest, and we are going to meet one of the youngest performers ever at Jazz Fest, Anissa Lee, who is going to perform Saturday at the festival. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.